I hastened on to tell how nature, intervenient till this time, and secondary, now at length was sought for her own sake.
The prelude by William Wordsworth was read by Sir Ian McKellen. It was recorded in your actual Dove Cottage in the Lake District. The producer in Manchester was Susan Roberts, and the next part is tomorrow at the same time. Every afternoon next week here on 4 Extra, you can hear Khaled Hosseini's The Kite Runner. It's a modern classic which tells the story of two young boys who unite over a shared passion for the fierce Afghan sport of kite fighting.
The kite fighting tournament started early in the morning and didn't end until only the winning kite flew in the sky. The streets were filled with kite fighters, jerking and tugging on their lines, squinting up to the sky trying to gain position to cut the opponent's line. Every kite fighter had an assistant. In my case, Hassan. The rules were simple. Fly your kite, cut the opponents, good luck.
But when it's tested by much bigger battles than kite fighting, will the friendship of Amir and Hassan survive? Kulvinder Gear reads The Kite Runner, starting on Monday afternoon at 2:15, here on Radio 4 Extra.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 3 o'clock now. We've got Lust, Murder and Madness next here on 4 Extra, so hide your children away until 4 o'clock when they can come back into the room to hear Miriam Margolyes read James and the Giant Peach and wish Jessica Ennis a happy birthday with Mel in the 4 o'clock show. We've classic comedy later tonight here on 4 Extra. Neddy Seagoon investigates a dastardly denture-stealing plan in the Goon Show at 7. Now, the Seventh Dimension's own Toby Haydock has a starring role in our drama now. It's a two-part adaptation of Émile Zola's psychological thriller set in mid-19th century France. It's a cautionary tale of adultery, murder and revenge. Thérèse Raquin was dramatised for radio by Diana Griffiths.
Flat on my stomach like an animal in the long grass by the river. Eyes wide open, body flexing, ready to spring. It is only here that I feel free, and I could stay for hours scorched by the sun. Sometimes I have ridiculous dreams where the water is gathering itself to leap up and attack me. And my body tenses, and my brain races as I try to find a way to beat the raging river.
Yes, where are you?
Oh. Have you been out in the sun again without your hat?
Yes.
You look like a peasant.
You wanted me on?
Therese, we're moving to Paris.
Paris?
Camille wants to get a job.
I have an idea to find a post in administration there.
You wanted to leave for now?
I want to work in a big office and wear smart clothes and shiny cufflinks. You'd like that, wouldn't you?
I told him he's not strong enough for regular work.
And I told you, Mother, that I've always in the past done what you have wanted me to do.
Yes, but for your own good, son. Only for your own good.
So now you are going to start doing what I want for a change. Or I shall refuse to marry Therese.
What? Oh, it's all been arranged. We're going to have to sell this house.
Well, we could rent somewhere to start with. You've got enough money for us to live on until I find work, I know that.
I could look for a little haberdashery business, couldn't I? Like I used to have. I know that trade. Therese and I could run it together, and if we could find one with accommodation...
Yeah, how long will all this take?
Now, let me see. I could take a trip to Paris.
Good. Go this week. I hope to move at the end of the month. Oh, don't look so miserable, Therese. You'll be glad when we're there, you'll see.
The arcade of the Pont Neuf near the Seine in Paris. An alleyway, at the most 30 paces long and a few paces wide, with dark, dusty shops. A dealer in imitation jewellery sells 15 sous rings. A candle casts glistering stars on the fake jewellery. The dealer, dozes in her cupboard as people scurry by because no one strolls in this cutthroat alley. Opposite the jeweller's, there's a haberdasher's shop framed in damp green woodwork whose front window will soon bear my name in letters of red. Thérèse Raquin.
My dear Thérèse, you'll see how happy we shall be in that little nest.
From the outside, through its windows we gaze in, and there are caps and collars, stockings and socks, ribbons, vests, hairnets, all hanging yellow from wire hooks.
And there are three beautiful rooms upstairs, and the arcade is full of people. Oh, there's no fear of us ever being dull.
As I enter, it's as though I'm descending into the clammy soil of a grave. My heart is full of sobs, but I do not cry. The decision has been made, and so Camille and I were married and we all moved here to Paris. Camille was happy enough.
I managed to obtain a post in the administration of the Orléans Railway, where I earn 100 francs a month. Every morning, on my way to work, I sit in front of Notre Dame and contemplate the scaffolding surrounding the cathedral, which is undergoing repairs. Oh, and I count all the cabs leaving the railway station. And then, after work, because I'm never in a hurry to get home, I go and watch the bears in the Jardin des Plantes. The behaviour of these huge beasts pleases me greatly. Then at night, when the lamp is lit, I return to my good wife and mother, and after dinner, the three of us sit in the shop, all cosy, chatting about our day. And big fat tabby cat Francois lies curled asleep on the corner of the counter.
So you think that man in the next office might resign and you'll get his job?
Well, I should be due for promotion in any case soon. Aren't you proud of your husband, Thérèse?
I look at him. Short and thin, lanky fair hair, face covered in red blotches. He looks like the sickly spoilt child he's always been.
Have you drunk up your milk, son?
Yes, Mother.
Fetch his pills, Thérèse.
I won't take them unless she does too.
Make sure his bed is thoroughly warm through tonight.
Yes, son.
I think he might have a cold coming on and I don't want him catching his death.
Oh, don't fuss, Mother.
Fuss? For the first 15 years of his life, I struggled with every possible evil he contracted. Fever after fever arrived to try and tear him away from me. And still I brought him back to life 10 times over. Thérèse kept him company, bless the girl, day and night, through those difficult years.
Look at me. I am perfectly all right.
Oh, goodness. 7 o'clock already. Oh, I'd better go upstairs and put the water on for tea. Because this is Thursday night, and every week on Thursday night, we receive our friends for a pleasant evening of chat and dominoes.
But I wish you'd make an effort and join in with a bit more enthusiasm, Thérèse.
I do try.
At 7 o'clock sharp, I light the fire upstairs in the dining room, set the lamp in the centre of the table, place a box of dominoes beside it, and wipe the tea service. Ordinarily, at 8 o'clock, Monsieur Michaud, retired commissary of police and an old friend of mine, arrives with his daughter Suzanne.
They're late tonight, Mother.
15 minutes, unheard of. Usually you can set your clock by Michaud.
That'll be them now. The travellers return.
Sorry for the same.
Welcome, welcome. I'll take a call.
Oh, thank you.
But there was an incident.
Oh, what incident?
Sit yourselves down now. Now tell us.
It was in the room as around, wasn't it, Father?
Got near there.
That's where they stopped us going through, so we were late.
Apparently, they found the body of a young woman in a trunk in a hotel room.
She was naked.
How can you get a body in a trunk?
She was cut up into 4 pieces, they said.
Oh, gruesome.
And her head was missing.
Suzanne.
Sorry, Father.
Lack of a head will make her extremely difficult to identify, of course. Yes, I was having a word with some of the young officers at the scene. They all know me, you know. And they were telling me that the guest who was staying in that room, the owner of the trunk, that is, sneaked off during the night. He'd given a false ID and particulars to the hotel when he checked in. So there are few clues, and the police are frankly baffled.
But they will catch him, won't they?
I don't know, Camille.
Monsieur,
there are many.
That is enough, please.
Oh, but, Mother, it's interesting.
It's not good for your health, and it's time for our game.
So Camille empties the box of dominoes onto the oilcloth.
Yes.
And everyone becomes absorbed in the game.
Mix this up.
Apart from me. And Francois asleep on my lap. They exasperate me, these people. They bore me. I'm buried in a tomb with mechanical corpses who, when their strings are pulled, move their heads and wave their arms and legs about.
Thérèse! But that was a stupid move. You're not concentrating.
I've got a headache.
Well, put the cat down.
Shop. I'll go.
Well, don't be long.
I won't.
But after serving the customer, I sit for as long as possible. The damp air of the shop calms the burning fever of my hands.
Bye, then.
At 11 o'clock, the guests leave and we lock up the shop and retire. Francois goes to sleep on the chair in the kitchen. My aunt goes to her bedroom. Camille is already fast asleep as I stand and throw open the window and stare out at a high black wall. For 3 years now, no change. Every week the same. Nothing happens. Nothing will ever happen. So this is life.
Oh, you're early tonight, son.
I've got a surprise for you both.
What surprise?
Now, close your eyes. Oh. Go on. I said close your eyes, Thérèse. Come on in, quick. Right. Can open them again. Look! Don't you recognise this gentleman, Mother?
Bonjour, Madame Raquin.
Well, I...
What? You don't recognise Laurent? Little Laurent from when we lived in Vernon?
Oh.
Whose daddy owns those beautiful fields of corn out at Jufosse Way? Don't you remember?
Laurent! Well, of course! But it's been years. Oh, and you've grown so... Sit down, lad, sit down.
Just imagine, this joker has been employed at the Orléans railway station for 18 months.
And it was only tonight that we met and recognised each other.
He's already got a good position in the firm. He earns 1,500 francs a year. Well, his father sent him to college and he's read for the bar and he's learnt painting.
Oh, fancy now. You'll dine with us tonight, Laurent?
I'd be delighted, madame.
I'll go and light the stove.
Now take off your hat, Laurent. Make yourself comfortable.
He was tall. Broad with black hair, red lips, big hands. Clenched. His fists could fell an ox. His whole body was solid like a bull.
But surely you must know my wife. Don't you remember? That little cousin of mine who used to play with us at Vernon.
Of course. I had no difficulty in recognising Madame.
He was looking at me full in the face.
It's good to see you again.
Yes. If you'll excuse me, I must go and help my aunt.
More meat.
All right.
Thanks.
Customer! You stay where you are, Thérèse. I'll go.
So, you didn't fancy it? Being a lawyer, then.
No. Well, I pretended to follow the classes, of course, so that I could draw my father's allowance, 1,200 francs. I live with one of my college chums. He was a painter, and I took up painting as well. We had grand times, smoking, drinking, fooling about. We hardly ever did any work.
Really?
Unfortunately, it couldn't last. My father found out and stopped my allowance. So... as I could see quite plainly that I was going to die of hunger. I had to go out and find a proper job.
Did you miss it, though? The painting?
Not at all. The studio where we lived was huge. Very comfortable. I missed that. And the women who came to pose for us, oh, they were beautiful.
Pose? You mean in the... what?
Nude. Of course. They do, for artists, strip off.
Well, you must have thought it was very funny. I mean, you must have been shocked the first time it happened. I mean, I would be.
The first time? No. Thought it was quite natural. My model was a redhead. Superb, firm.
White flesh, gorgeous breasts, hips as wide... Oh, but I'm embarrassing Madame Therese.
No, no, not at all.
She sits, without moving, just staring at me with her black eyes. And through her parted lips, I can see the pink flesh of the inside of her mouth. Glancing from her to Camille, I have to restrain a smile.
What a life you must have led.
You know, Camille, I'd like to paint your portrait.
Would you? Really?
You've got an interesting face. I could come here and do it. It wouldn't take much longer than, say, a week.
Well, that would be fine, and you can dine with us every night. I'll have my hair curled, and I'll put on my black frock coat and...
If you've all finished eating, we'll get this table cleared, ready for the evening. You'll stay and have a game of dominoes with us, Laurent.
That's great fun.
At 8 o'clock sharp, the guests arrived. When Camille introduced me to them, Suzanne looked wary. Michaud was dubious.
From Vernon, you say?
That's right.
No, I don't think I was acquainted with your family.
But I was very charming and friendly, and I laughed and joked and joined in the dominoes with great enthusiasm and generally did my best to please.
Therese!
It's all right, I'll go.
Oh, madame.
There was something about him that affected me deeply. I remained in my seat until 11 o'clock that night, playing and talking. But he didn't seem to bother about me in the slightest.
Good night, Madame Therese.
Monsieur. Good night.
She's a strange little woman, staring at me, weighing me up. I'll bet I could have her if I wanted to. In fact, I'm sure I could. She must be bored to death with Camille in that shop. Why not have a go? But, well, is it worth the bother? She's not particularly beautiful and it might only cause trouble. All the same, I could knock him out with a single punch. I'll kiss her when I get the chance. See what happens.
Sure the light is all right in here, Laurent?
I said this was the best room for it, didn't I?
I was painting Camille's portrait in their bedroom.
You can see me well enough, though.
I see you perfectly.
Only I would have thought the dining room...
This is best.
Can I look now?
Not yet.
When?
It took me 3 evenings to draw the head. On the fourth day, I started with the paints.
Oh, that's very good.
Putting little dabs of colour on my palette... Painting with the point of the brush, dotting the canvas. Taking my time.
What about you, Madame Therese? Do you like it? Is it a good resemblance, do you think?
I don't know.
Just for a moment, shivers seem to run through her body. Then silence once more.
It's no good asking her.
Time to pack up now, Camille.
Is it? Oh, I have enjoyed tonight. I know it's going to be such a splendid painting.
Well, let's hope so. It just always takes longer than one imagines.
Oh, so we see plenty of you. Well, that's good.
I lived in a small rented attic room, not much more than a dog kennel. I used to get home as late as possible after work, loitering at cheap restaurants, smoking my pipe, drinking 3 sous worth of rotgut brandy and then wandering along the quays. Now, I took to calling every evening on the Rakan.
It's exactly like you.
Almost done. Last few touches to go in there and there and...
Come on, look, Camille. Come on, Therese. What do you think?
He's very modern.
I knew the portrait was vile. The final version was a dirty grey colour with heavy blotches all over it. And Camille's face was a dull green, so it looked like the face of a drowned man.
Now, that's the face of a person of distinction on that canvas, that is. Don't you think so, Mother?
No more than it should be, my son. It simply does you justice. Now, go out and fetch a couple of bottles of champagne to celebrate.
Oh, good idea.
I'll give you some money from the shop. Then perhaps we'll close early for once.
Oh, splendid.
Suddenly we're alone. Therese remains standing. There's no time to lose. The mother or husband might return any minute.
I must have you.
No.
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 Yes.
From the very start, we found our affair necessary.
Inevitable.
And quite natural.
As if we had known each other for years.
I can't come to you. I can't leave the shop. so you must come to me. Can you get an afternoon off work?
A Tuesday? I could find a reason.
Good. My aunt will be in the shop. We'll meet in my bedroom.
But how will I get...
Not through the house. Don't come that way. Listen, there's a passage leading from the arcade which comes straight up the back stairs. But be careful that you're not seen by that jeweller opposite. Wait until she's got a customer and her attention is distracted, and then slip into the passage and make your way up. I'll unlock the door at the top of the stairs. I'll be waiting for you.
Slowly, she comes forward and pulls me to her. Her body is supple and strong and smells of freshly washed flesh and clean linen.
You're beautiful.
And I love you.
A strange beauty born of pure ecstasy. Transformed by love. Lips soft and swollen, eyes shining. Her face has a radiance that seems to come from within.
My blood is burning in my veins. My nerves are strung taut. I am waking from a dream.
She strips off her slip, flaunts herself before me. She taunts me and teases and offers herself without any shame. I have never known anything like her. All my other women have been cold by comparison. Therese's violence almost terrifies me. When I finally left her, I staggered home like a drunken man. The next day, in the cold light of morning...
I must have been crazy. She bewitched me. It'll have to stop. I'll tell her.
Laurent.
But the very next sight of her makes me so mad for her.
When, my darling, when?
Next Tuesday, same time, same place. From that day, Therese entered my life completely. And we met as often as we could.
Camille has never felt a single tremor of desire in his whole existence. On our wedding night, the only change in my life was that instead of going to bed in my own little room onto the left of the stairs, I turned right to his.
Why did you marry him?
I pitied him. And it was always understood that I would. I was orphaned at the age of two. My father was my aunt's brother. He was a soldier, and when he died, she was kind enough to give me a home.
And your mother?
The daughter of an Algerian tribal chief, I'm told. I often think of her. I often feel I belong more to her than I do to anyone here. Oh, I should like to have stayed with her. Never to have been parted. My dream as a child was to run barefoot along the dusty roads and live like a gypsy, but...
But?
I was brought up with Camille, and he was an invalid, and I had to look after him. I spent long days shut up in his room, and I couldn't move, because I hadn't got cross if I made a noise. I had to sleep in the same damp, sick room as him, share the same bed. A night I got as far away from him as I could to avoid this sickly smell of his body. And when I touched him, my fingers used to sink into his flesh like warm clay. My aunt used to give him medicine, but he wouldn't take it unless I shared it with him. So to please her, I had to take a dose too. What a childhood. I don't know how I survived. I used to pretend to be docile and accept it all, but my blood was boiling all the time and I was angry, so angry. They made me ugly. They turned me into a hypocrite and a liar, and they stole everything from me. Many times I wanted to run away and head straight for the sun, but my courage failed me and I stayed there, appearing to be quiet and gentle, but dreaming. I was never what I seemed to be. I've been acting a part all my life. So, why did I marry him? I don't know.
You're not jealous, are you?
Not jealous. But he has the right to possess you.
Possess me? Let me tell you that I have found my husband to be just the same little suffering boy whose bed I had once before shared as a child. Frail, weak, same pale, clammy flesh, same body odour. It's disgusting. But you... Look at you. Your hands. I love your hands on me. I love you. I loved you from the first minute I saw you. When you kissed me, when that portrait was finished, I didn't understand what I felt. I would have liked to have beaten you. It was almost hatred that I felt, not love. It was so powerful. And now I think you might not have respected me for giving in to you immediately. But I had been so desperate. I've been so desperate for you for so long.
Have you never been happy?
Oh, there were times. I've known when we lived there, in that little house by the river. The countryside, fresh air, flowers. Sometimes I could go outside and forget, yes. And Aunt has always been kind. I don't think I'm not grateful to her for giving me a home. But then Camille wanted to move to Paris. And now here I am. Buried alive again in this vile shop in this foul arcade. When you first saw me, I looked like some kind of idiot, didn't I? It was because I was stifled, overwhelmed, and there have been times when I've thought of just throwing myself into the Seine.
Come back to bed now. Come back to bed. Come on. Come on. There. It's okay. All right.
As our affair went on, Thérèse became more and more daring. She seemed to revel in the danger of it. On my visits, the only precaution she took was to tell her aunt that she was going upstairs to rest.
Shh! Don't make so much noise. She'll hear you.
Oh, you. You're always so worried. I've told you. She's at her counter and she won't leave. She's too afraid of being robbed.
Shh! It's her. What should I do?
No. Don't get up. Get down in the bed. Right down. I'll push your clothes in with you and throw mine on top like that. Go on, quick. Keep still.
Thérèse? I thought I heard voices. You're all right, my dear. I was worried about you.
No. I've still got a terrible migraine.
Is there anything I can do?
No. I just need to sleep some more.
But of course. You rest. I can mind the shop.
You see? He's blind. Because she's not in love.
At other times, I thought she was quite mad and wandering.
Look at him. Just look at Francois. When you think he understands and he's planning to tell Camille...
Don't say things like that.
He knows about us. Wouldn't it be funny if one day in the shop he just started talking?
That's enough. The cat's going in. Now.
Here they come, the workers.
Evening, Mother.
Evening, Mother.
Oh, you, Laurent. Now sit yourselves down, take your boots off, put your feet up, you must be tired. Oh,
I had it all now. I was sweetheart to the wife, friend to the husband, and the spoilt child of the mother. I had arrived. I took full advantage of the hospitality of the house, dining with them every evening and making myself completely at home.
I'll go and make tea. Thérèse? Fetch some matches to light Laurent's cigarette.
They're over there.
Thérèse?
He's only got to stretch his arm.
Get the matches.
I, for my part, felt an extraordinary pleasure in deceiving Camille and his mother. I treated Laurent in public as if I detested the very sight of him.
Don't worry, Thérèse, it doesn't matter.
No, let her.
All right.
I want to kiss you now.
Tomorrow.
What's tomorrow?
I'm obliging.
May I light you, sir?
Now, that's better. A little politeness never harmed anyone.
I felt as though nature had made me as a mate for Laurent and he for me. We complimented each other in every way. As always, on Thursday evening, when my aunt and Camille saw our guests to the door, I moved to him like a blinding flash of lightning in a leaden sky.
Tuesday afternoon.
As usual.
I can't wait. I'll try and get away earlier than last time.
And there were moments when I felt so giddy with joy that despite being such a good actress, I nearly gave it all away.
Someone's happy. What's the matter?
Nothing.
Flowers in the bedroom?
I thought they'd brighten things up.
It's only a bedroom.
And so several months passed until one afternoon...
Laurent?
As I was about to leave the office to go and meet Therese...
Laurent, where do you think you're going?
Out to deliver some necessary papers, sir.
Thence to take the rest of the afternoon off.
Well?
As usual.
Sir?
Every week or more often. It can't go on, you know.
Sir, I don't know.
This absenteeism. These days or half days off. Holidays, you might even call them. Taken on any old pretext. Have been noticed and noted. Briefly, your activities have been discussed recently at board level.
Yes, sir.
And it has been formally decided at that level that you will be dismissed from your post if you ever again go out and about your own business in the firm's time. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Good. That's final. Now get back to your work and do it. Do what it is we pay you to do.
I waited in vain for him that afternoon.
The evening was torture to me, sitting opposite her angry glare.
And at last he told me.
So we shall be unable to see one another anymore.
But we've got to talk about this. When can we meet? When can I see you?
That's it. I don't know.
You two having a little chat? Well, that's unusual. Not interrupting anything, am I?
For a fortnight, I was unable to speak to Therese alone. And then I knew how necessary she'd become to my life.
I became obsessed to see him at all costs.
Therese, will you please stop fidgeting? Where are you going?
I must have some air.
Shut that window, it's freezing.
A year ago, if I had been told I would become the total slave of any woman... But she has become as necessary to my life as eating and drinking. I'm like a starved animal without her. I no longer dare to go to the shop every evening in case I do something stupid. Then I received a letter from her, asking me to remain at home that night.
You polished off your suit quick.
I thought I might go out.
Out?
Aunt, you remember Madame Simon? That customer who moved away a couple of months ago.
She never paid us what she owed, did she?
Well, I thought I might go and call on her this evening and see if I can get the money.
Well, she went to Batignolles, my dear, and that's an awful long way for you to go. But it might be worth it.
Shall I come with you?
No. You might catch cold if you go out in the night air.
Therese is right. Now best you stay home, Camille.
I'm coming up. Oh, God, I'd never be with you again.
Oh. Come in quick. I can't wait for you.
Ten o'clock. We must go.
No.
Yes.
When will you come again?
Never.
No.
I have no excuses to come out in the evening.
What? So it's a goodbye?
I will not say goodbye. I'm going now.
I wish him no harm, but he's always in our way. He's always there. Can't you get rid of him for a while? Send him on a long journey.
As
Only one journey that would be long enough for me. That from which you never return. He will bury us all. People who are constantly ill never die, they just linger on.
I had a daydream that I stayed the whole night in your arms. We woke up together. I want to be your husband, do you understand?
Don't talk like that. Is it you? Do I want to have the strength to leave and stay here? Oh, give me the courage, my darling. Oh, tell me we'll see each other again. You need me, don't you? You love me. We'll find a way to live together.
Then come back tomorrow.
I've told you I can't. If you like, I'll tell him everything when I get home. All about us, and then I'll come back here. I'm not afraid of scandal.
No, no. We have to run away and live like beggars, and I can't do that to you.
Well, what can we do?
Your aunt has money saved, doesn't she?
Yes, but it's all invested.
Camille was boasting that he doesn't have to work if he doesn't want to. 40,000 francs, he said.
Well, whatever it is, it's no good to us.
If only he would die.
Die?
We would marry.
We would marry. Sometimes people die, but...
But...
It's dangerous for those who survive.
Now listen.
What?
I'm not a fool. I don't want danger. I want to love you in peace. Accidents happen daily. A foot may slip, a tile may fall, where the wind alone is guilty.
I don't understand.
Never mind. Just keep quiet. Go home now. I will arrange matters. And if you don't see much of me, don't worry. Something will happen, and we will be together in the end. You are mine. You belong to me and only me. Do you swear to that?
I swear it. And you also do it as you please.
When I get back to bed, the sheets are still warm. I open the window and lie on my back, arms bare, hands open, exposed to the fresh night air.
I want her. I love her. I've got to have her for myself. I could spend the rest of my life like this, slaving as a clerk, eating in cheap restaurants, living in this garret.
As I make my way back home, my face is burning. But I can't get the words out of my head.
Sometimes people die.
Accidents happen daily.
A foot may slip.
Sometimes people die. The wind alone is guilty.
A tile may fall.
Something will happen.
It's dangerous for those who survive.
He's always in our way. I want to be your husband.
Just for those who survive.
I had a daydream. Can't you get rid of him?
Never return.
Sometimes people die. The wind alone is guilty.
A tile may fall.
I want something subtle. No danger, no scandal, no violence, no cries, no terror. Just a quick disappearance of some sort. I would simply push a man away to take his place. I'll wait for an opportunity. Then I'll kill him.
When I reach home and get into bed, it's late. The sheets are damp and cold.
You. I could smash your face in with my fist.
I went to the shop only on Thursday evenings now.
Ah, Laurent. It's good to see you.
Madame Racan.
You look ill.
Oh, I haven't been sleeping well.
You should come round more often, like you used to. Let us feed you up. Shouldn't eat her ears.
Well, you mustn't take any notice of her.
I know her. She might appear cold, but she has the warmest heart.
We had no more meetings. But when we could, we pressed each other's hands silently, fit to crush.
I wanted to dig my nails in so hard that I would carry off strips of her raw flesh. One Thursday evening after Michaud and Suzanne had arrived, everyone was plaguing Michaud with questions about their favourite topic, his experiences in the police.
and a great deal never comes out at all. Many crimes remain undiscovered, and many murderers escape justice.
Oh, to think that there are people like that out there, walking free.
Well, I'd like to believe that the police do their duty and that I'm never likely to brush up against a murderer in the street.
Certainly the police do their duty, Camille, but they can't do the impossible.
No, of course not, Michaud. We understand that.
There are people so wicked you'd swear they studied crime at the devil's own school. Believe you me. They would escape detection by the Almighty himself. Yes, I've known quite a few murders where the authorities were never able to lay hands on the culprits.
Despicable.
Who knows where they are now? Maybe one of them is our neighbour, and we may meet him on our way home.
Laurent and I remain silent. Just listening.
Sometimes.
Yes, Suzanne, speak up.
I heard a story once that a servant was put in prison for stealing a silver spoon and fork belonging to her mistress. And 2 months afterwards, when a tree was cut down, they found the spoon and fork in a magpie's nest. So it was the magpie that was the thief and the servant was released. So you see, the guilty are always punished in the end.
What? They put the magpie in prison then, did they?
Oh, no.
Oh, come on, Suzanne.
Oh, you.
That's not what she meant, Camille.
Shall we start the game now?
But there might be murderers walking around in the sunshine.
Unfortunately, yes.
It's immoral.
Sometimes on a Sunday when the weather was fine, Camille and I would take a trip out of Paris as far as Saint-Ouen-en-Asnières, where we treated ourselves to a simple dinner in one of the restaurants beside the river. Since Laurent had become friendly with the family, he almost invariably came with us. This particular Sunday had been arranged for some time and the three of us left for Saint-Ouen about 11 o'clock. It was to be the last trip of the season. Autumn approached and the cold breezes at night had begun to make the air chilly. But now, today, the sky was blue, the air still intensely warm, and the dusty roads were brightly lit up by the sun.
Come on, Laurent! Stop lagging behind!
What's the hurry? It's a holiday!
I was kicking stones casually as I strolled along, but I couldn't take my eyes off Therese's swinging hips in front of me.
Oh, I'm ever so hot. Let's look somewhere shady and lie down and have a rest for a few hours.
We crossed to one of the many islands in the Seine and plunged into a small wood. Soon we were in the wilderness with trees all around us, in a narrow clearing that was silent and fresh. Therese lay full length among the leaves.
I love this place.
Mind out. Might be muddy just there. It's drier over here.
Camille seated himself on a patch of moss, and I lay on my stomach with my chin resting on my hands.
Reminds me of the sun at Vernon when I was a child. So beautiful.
Beautiful? I never thought it was so very special.
Well, you never came down to the river with me, that's why. You all stayed indoors.
Yeah, well, I've never liked deep water. It frightens me.
And he slid down onto his back and quietly went to sleep. Therese was feigning slumber, I could tell. I watched her and Camille for some time. Then, unable to resist, I crept up to her, and with my head hidden by her skirts, I pressed kiss after kiss upon her shoes and white stockings.
No.
I'm on fire for you.
He might wake up.
You're not his. You're mine, and I can't have you. Kiss me.
No! He jumped to his feet and stood with his back to a tree, staring at Camille spread out on the ground, mouth contorted into a silly grimace, head thrown back, showing his thin, wrinkled neck with the Adam's apple standing out red and prominent. Camille looked contemptible and vile. Laurent moved to stand over him.
I could kill him now.
Oh, please.
I could just raise the heel of my boot and smash his head.
No!
No, no, you're right. I'd be a fool to do it that way. The police would be onto me straight away. So, we'll think of something else.
What are you doing?
Camille. Hey, Camille, wake up.
Come on, wakey wakey.
Stop it. Who's tickling my nose? That's not right, you fool. I might have guessed.
Come on. Baby's nap is over and Daddy's getting hungry. Let's go look for dinner.
We left the island and walked along the roads, crowded with groups in their Sunday finery.
We'll go to... Oh, what's that restaurant called? The Pink Geranium. You can always get a good roast chicken there.
Boating men passed us by. Files of couples, old people, clerks and shopmen with their wives moved along in waves, and as the sun descended towards the horizon, there was a freshness in the air. When we arrived at the restaurant, we seated ourselves at a table on the terrace. Leaning over the balustrade, I could see the quay with its wine shops and shanties, the black dabs of men's coats and the brilliant skirts of the women. And beyond, on the Seine, on the hillocks, a sort of vague bluish mist was rising.
I say, Camille, I've got an idea. Let's go for a row on the river before dinner.
Oh, but I'm hungry.
We'll have to give them time to roast a fowl anyway. We'll be bored to death waiting an hour here. Hey, waiter!
We booked a table and decided on a menu, and as the host also let out pleasure boats, Laurent hired a small skiff.
Oh. Doesn't look strong enough to carry the three of us.
Much stronger than it looks. Come on, get in.
Oh. We'll have to be careful not to move about in it or we'll be in for a famous ducking.
You're always so frightened of everything. And sit down, man, sit down. Therese,
come on, be careful. I'm going to pitch him in.
I can't.
Now, I'll answer for everything. Obey me. Get into the boat. Get in.
Look at her, look. She's the one who's afraid of the water, not me. She's terrified. Just look at her face. Well, why are you steady on your capsizes?
Go to the other end, Therese. Stay there.
He grasped the sculls and the skiff left the bank. Huge shadows of twilight fell from the trees and the water ran black at the edges. In the middle of the river were great, pale silver trails. Soon he allowed the boat to drift along in the current. And all three of us watched as the sunlight faded and left the tops of the branches. Night was falling from above. The trees looked darker now. Everything seemed to turn to brown and grey. The Seine, the sky, the islands and the hills.
Juice, the water's cold.
Camille is lying on his stomach, with his head over the side, dabbling his hands in the river.
It wouldn't be very pleasant to go in there at first.
The skiff is about to enter a small arm of the river, which is narrow and dark between two islands. On the other side of the island, a boating party is slowly approaching, but there's no one else around. Laurent rises and grabs Camille around the body.
Now!
Get off, Laurent! You're tickling me!
No!
Oh, stop it! You'll make me fall in! No, no! Stop fooling about! It's not funny anymore! Why are you looking at me like that? Therese! Therese! Help me!
Look at him, clinging with both hands to the seat as Laurent tugs at him, one hand pressed to his throat.
Help me! Help!
I turn my head away, unable to look at him.
Please!
Let go, you! Let go! Let go or I will break your fingers!
Why are you doing this to me?
Laurent finally tears him away from the side of the skiff and holds him up in the air like a child. But Camille, mad with terror and rage, twists around, stretching his neck forward, buries his teeth into Laurent's neck. And when Laurent threw him into the river, Camille carried a piece of his flesh away in his mouth.
Now, use her.
No. I've got to find her.
Put this round her.
Come on, man. Get into the boat.
But he's still in there.
No good you diving. Too dark to see anything now.
He can't swim. Camille! Camille! My friend, her husband, it's all my fault. He was dancing and jumping about, and I should have stopped him.
I saw everything.
Did you?
Me too.
You were all there on one side of the boat. That's why it tipped over.
And when we capsized, he shouted to me to save his wife.
Poor little woman.
I never saw him or heard him again.
Towing the capsized skiff behind them, they took us back to the pink geranium. The host and his wife let us in and gave us dry clothes, but Therese had another nervous attack and burst into such heart-rending sobs that she had to be put to bed. I then set out for Paris to break the news to Madame Racan. And it was the boatman, in the end, who sat down and ate the dinner prepared for Camille. But I did not go straight to the shop. I went to old Michaud's, who was at home with his daughter, Suzanne. Firstly, because I didn't want to have to break the news to the old lady myself. And secondly, I wanted protection in case I became a suspect.
Well, this is a terrible, terrible thing to happen.
I've come straight to you because I dare not go to Madame Racan alone and I want you to accompany me.
To leave one's home and die like that all of a sudden. Poor Therese.
And his poor mother. Poor, poor madame. Whatever shall we say to her? Certainly, you were right to come and find us.
Of course, we'll go with you.
Don't come any further. If she sees you with us, she'll suspect the worst before we say anything. Wait here.
Right.
I wait. I look at the shops. I look at the women who push past me.
Come on. Come on, where are you?
For a full half hour, I wait. And then... Come on, Therese.
She's in a state of severe agitation.
Leaving Suzanne to look after the shocked and bereaved mother, Michaud accompanied me back to San Juan.
No, no.
Her head and her hands are burning.
Don't do it, please. Don't. Laurent.
Hush, shh, shh, shh. I know that in her mind's eye, she can still see us struggling at the side of the boat.
Camille, I can't.
Hush, hush now. Shh, shh. She can see Camille, livid, horrible, rearing up straight above the turbid water.
Drowning.
Shh. Don't say anything more, Therese.
I'll go downstairs, see if I can hurry things along.
Below, in the restaurant, the police have been taking their time interviewing everyone, drawing up a statement of the accident. But when Michaud goes down and makes himself known to them, everything is over in 10 minutes. My account is corroborated by the boating man and is never in doubt. On the contrary, I was Camille's best friend. I had plunged into the water and risked my own life to save him, and the next day I was to be hailed as a hero in all the press.
Laurent, is Therese ready?
Give me your hand.
Oh, our hands together are burning.
A cab is on its way to take us back to Paris.
You feel as if the blood in our fists is molten fire. Oh, Laurent.
Be strong, Therese. You must be strong.
Yes.
We have a long time to wait. Remember.
I will remember.
Suzanne?
Me.
How are they both?
Therese got up today. First time I've seen her face in 3 days. She's been lying towards the wall and she looks terrible, like a corpse herself. She shouldn't have got up. She's still got a fever.
And my old friend?
I think that's why Therese stirred herself, because she was worried about her aunt. As soon as she was dressed, she went straight to her room.
She was lying in bed, staring straight ahead, and still as a cat at her feet. I stood in the doorway and we looked at one another. And then she stretched out her arms to me
as if she was remembering slowly.
My poor child.
I ran forward and we put our arms around each other.
My poor Camille.
But my own eyes were dry, and I hid them in the fold of the sheet. I had dreaded this first meeting with her ever since the drowning. That's why I stayed in bed, deliberately to delay it.
Madame got up later and I made them some soup. But the old lady is very frail and can't walk now without the aid of a stick.
We'll open the shop tomorrow.
But you're not strong enough.
Oh, I shall lose my sanity if I remain in that room any longer. We reopen tomorrow.
The city morgue, where the unidentified dead are taken, is a sight within reach of everybody. The door stands open, and all are free to enter. On the day following the drowning, searches had been made to find the corpse of Camille, but to no avail. And I couldn't get rid of a feeling of deep unease. So I forced myself to call in at the morgue each morning on the way to the office, to check whether the body had been found. For 2 weeks, no luck. And then...
We had a new one in this morning, sir. Would this perhaps be whom you're looking for?
Oh, my God, he looks...
Not as bad as some as I could show you.
He looks as if he shrunk back to when he was a child. That is what I have done.
Sir?
Yes, it's him. Yes.
Never a pretty sight when they've been in the water, sir. Never. You all right?
I went to tell Michaud, who immediately took things in hand. The formalities were performed in as short a time as possible. Camille was buried and the certificate of death was delivered.
I've done it. That's it. I've killed him. And got away with it. It's all settled. Now all I need to do is wait a year for the official period of mourning to be over to collect the prize.
Suddenly, something stung me in the neck and I felt as if my skin had been branded with a red-hot iron. I turned down the collar of my shirt and looked in the mirror. The bite from Camille. It was a hole as big as a 2-sou coin, just under my right ear, red against the white skin of my neck.
Water. I'll wash it away. Wash it away. There. It'll be gone in a few days. What? Who's there?
Thérèse Raquin, Thérèse, was played by Charlotte Riley, Laurent by Andrew Buchan, Camille by Toby Haydock and Madame Raquin by Pauline Jefferson, with Robert Pickavance, Deborah McAndrew and Carl Siecka. Thérèse Raquin by Emile Zola was dramatised by Diana Griffiths and directed in Manchester by Pauline Harris. Poor old Toby, bumped off. Well, Thérèse and Laurent are now free to marry, but endless nights of torment await them. The story concludes tomorrow at the same time. Next week here on Radio 4 Extra, there's an adaptation of the groundbreaking novel by Wilkie Collins, written in 1859 and considered to be among the first mystery novels. The Woman in White is the story of a young teacher, Walter Hartwright, who's dispatched to Cumberland to teach the two sisters of Limeridge House. But an encounter with a troubled woman alters his relationship with the family.
I had an uneasy sense that in helping her I might have done wrong. At the same time, however, I didn't know how I could have done right.
Have you seen a woman pass this way? A young woman, in a white gown. She's escaped from my asylum.
The mysterious meeting immerses Hartwright in a search for truth, love and sanity. Starring Toby Stevens, The Woman in White begins on Monday morning at 10.
Yes, ambulances. Yeah, Haythorn's racing stables, quick as you can. And lifting gear, you'll need lifting gear to shift the horse box. Come quickly, please.
An end-of-season racing celebration ends in tragedy.
I can't believe it happened. It's just like some nightmare, and I still haven't woken up.
You actually saw the horse box start down the slope and run into the marquee?
What could I do?
Nigel Haver stars in Proof by Dick Francis.
Was there someone else with you?
No, the chap who was helping.
And what's happened to this helpful gentleman?
Proof, this Friday at 1:30 and again in the evening at 8:30 on Radio 4 Extra. Get ready for a big mouthful of giant peach. Mel's here now with the 4 o'clock show. I'll be back in an hour with double comedy, Flying the Flag and Snap from 5.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Hello and welcome to today's 4 o'clock show with me, Mel Gedroych. In our story today, we're kicking back and relaxing to the sound of the old green grasshopper's magical melodies.
From the moment that the first note was struck, the audience became completely spellbound. And as for James, never had he heard such beautiful music as this.
Miriam Margolyes is back with the next episode of Roald Dahl's classic tale, James and the Giant Peach. I think we're so relaxed and chilled out, someone's going to forget they're floating on the peach above the highest clouds. Stay tuned to find out if I'm right. Our giant insects are a very talented bunch, and among them, there's a poet. So we find out what it's like to perform some of Roald Dahl's other poems, his much-loved revolting rhymes, on stage.
The small girl smiles. One eyelid flickers.
Ding, ding.
She whips the pistol from her knickers. She aims it at the creature's head and bang, bang, bang. She shoots him dead.
All coming up on today's 4 o'clock show. But first... Oh yes, it must be thus. My magical mystery tour. Every day, I don't know if you know this, we go on a magical mystery tour. I drop clues throughout the show. Can you work out where we're going before we get there just before the story? Well, let's find out. Clue number one is this. We're going to the country with the longest river in Europe. Where are we going? Still to come, we go for a moonlit bike ride. But first... It's Tuesday, and every week at this time, we unfurl the old bunting and practice our hip hip hoorays as we say happy birthday to somebody special. Today, I'd like to wish a great, big, happy, huggy birthday to one of our golden girls of the London Olympics 2012, Jessica Ennis. It's heptathlon star Jessica's 28th birthday today. Now, many athletes became household names during the 2012 Olympics, but Jessica was the poster girl for the Games. She won her gold on Super Saturday, one of the greatest sporting days this country has ever witnessed. I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. Jessica published her autobiography towards the end of 2012, and when she came into the Woman's Hour studio, Jenny Murray asked her why she called the book Unbelievable.
It was a difficult decision. Obviously, I wanted it to be, you know, a great name that kind of stood out. And whenever I talk about my experience and my journey up until the Olympics, I always kind of describe it as, I can't quite believe it's happened. I can't believe I've had this journey. And I thought that that kind of tied in really nice, so I called it Unbelievable.
How much pressure were you under when you obviously became the poster girl for the whole show?
Definitely a lot of pressure. I think now when I look back and now that I've been able to kind of describe that journey in my book, it's a lot that kind of was put on my shoulders from the start. And yeah, it was a great, you know, unique situation that I was in, and I wouldn't change any part of it, but it was a lot of pressure.
How did you get started in athletics?
I started when I was 10 and went down to a summer Star Trek camp at my local track in Sheffield, and you know, met my coach down there, was introduced to all the events, and then started doing the heptathlon.
I think you made a joke that your parents saw it as a kind of way of childcare, didn't you?
Yeah, they. My mum, like I say in the book, she's, you know, a great believer of tiring your kids out and just, you know, getting them to burn off all their energy. And I was quite an active child, so they thought it was a great, you know, opportunity for them to have a bit of time out and for us to kind of burn off our energy at the track.
Now, you met your coach, Tony Minicello, when I think you were only 13. And you say that he often left you a crumpled wreck crying in your room. What sort of relationship is it between a young athlete and her tough coach?
It's a very unique and different relationship. Obviously, you spend a lot of time with your coach. You're often in stressful situations where you're training and trying to adapt to what you're doing and learn new kind of movement patterns. But yeah, we definitely have a very up and down relationship. He's an absolutely fantastic coach, and you know, I couldn't have achieved what I've achieved without him. But it's been a very kind of slow and long process from a young 13-year-old that knew nothing about sport and it was all very new to me, to, you know, the woman that I am now and Olympic champion.